Hello, I'm Juliet Foster, and welcome to the Magnus Communications podcast. Now, when COVID-19 forced the world into lockdown, it also saw a change in how we work. The morning commute to the office was abandoned in favour of home working, as days were reconstructed to accommodate the demands of jobs and family life. Striking the right work-life balance is clearly attractive, and might explain why between the 19th and the 30th of January 2022, 36% of the UK's working adults operated from home at least once in the last 7 days because of COVID. That's according to data from the Office for National Statistics. The ONS also found that 46% of these homeowners spent less money, although perhaps predictably, more of their cash went into financing utility bills. Now, home working may have its appeal, but the government believes that it undermines productivity at a time when the economy is coming under increasing pressure. So is it time for us to help along the economy by getting back to our offices, or with the right support, can home working boost the nation's productivity? Big questions, and I'm delighted to say that I can call on the services of the owner of a very big brain. Let's meet the author, life coach and financial services professional, Vinati Ramtree. Vinita, it's lovely to see you. How are you? Or rather, I should say, lovely to hear from you. We haven't spoken for a while.
We haven't, Juliet. It's always lovely to hear from you. And thank you so much for having me on here on such a critical topic, very, very timely. Because, I mean, we've been speaking about the pandemic for a few years, but it's always current because it's always so relevant to our lives and the decisions, these little things that impact us every single day.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing about the pandemic was that, yes, it forced most people to work from home, but it also brought forward that conversation about the work-life balance. And this is a conversation that's been going on for ages, certainly as long as I've been alive. But are you worried that that conversation is at risk of being shut down because the global economic crisis is the talking point and governments are trying to find new ways to get things under control?
I think, Juliet, the governments are trying for a fair reason in the sense that, we need to get the economies going back up. And as you said, you know, when people are working from home, sure, they're spending more on we're spending more on energy, maybe spending on data and, food and all of that. But we aren't really getting out there and doing things. But I don't think that things will really be shut down, because just as much as governments are aware, individuals too. So I'm sure you've heard about like the Great Resignation and just the fact that a lot of people have used this time to reflect and to really think through what it is that they want for their lives. So I would say that there will, of course, be more of us going back to work. There will be more of us going back to work for longer durations. Yet it will not be a full, start and shut down, case closed, saying get back to work and fully back to where we were pre-pandemic, because that awareness is one of those things, Julia. Once you've woken up, it's very hard to go back to sleep.
Absolutely. But when you actually peel back the layers of this, at the heart of it is the issue of productivity. Now, this is a question which economists have been wrangling with for a very long time. But what is productivity and how do you measure its effectiveness?
I think that is such an interesting question. And actually, one of the fantastic books I've read which talk about productivity, I think it's called The Second Curve by Charles Handy. And productivity during the industrial, revolution, it started with being defined as the output, right, from a certain amount of input. Like if I spend 2 hours and I solve 10 cases, then that is productivity. However, the way the world is moving now, productivity is actually different, right? It's very different to just incremental gain, saying I produce 5 widgets an hour through to 50 widgets an hour. Now it's more about also creativity and, just what is the quality of what we're producing, because it's not just about churning out more. So we do need to start looking at how we define productivity. And it's about, what is it? Not just the output, but the outcome that we've produced. Like, what did you actually get done through all of that effort? So I could have flown, and you and I could have flown to Singapore, like 6,000 miles to do this podcast. But would that really change the outcome that we're getting right here? So I think that's the key question which we need to start focusing on.
And that's really important, because, yes, we have to define what productivity means. But at the same time, we have to ask ourselves, where does emotional well-being fit into that? Because you have to ask, is there a compatibility between productivity, if you define it one way, and protecting the mental health of workers? Because they can't be productive if they're in distress.
I would absolutely agree. Workers or anyone cannot be productive if you're in distress. The question here will become, why would we be in distress if we are going back to work? Because a lot of people actually feel more distress being home alone and having to work in a home environment. So the way I look at the world, is really going to go into multiple directions where there will be a set of us who will say, look, I really like the office environment. That's the sort of role that works for me because I do not feel distressed. I like to interact with people. Yet there will be others who will find it distressing to just go to work for the sake of going to work. So for them, it will impact, of course, their productivity and their mental health. So a lot of us will have to now start tailoring our solutions as opposed to taking this, one size fits all, saying 9 to 5, Monday to Friday is the way to go.
Interesting point as well, because that's one argument for actually going back to work, because a lot of people who've been going to in-person events, etc., one of the things which emerges is they say, oh my gosh, it's so lovely meeting people again after the period of lockdown, etc., and yeah, talking to each other via Zoom tiles. But if you look at this from the government's argument, they would say, well, look, there's a very powerful case economically, because we know that high streets are in distress, and if you've actually got people in offices, they're going to go out, they're going to buy food. So that footfall is going to help the hospitality sector, for example, when you buy your sandwiches, when you buy your Coke, because this is a sector which took a big hit on COVID-19. But also as well, there is the decentralisation issue, that if you decentralise a business, that means that the management models and hierarchical structures are more expensive to manage because a workforce is scattered. So it's going to make it very difficult to run. So do they have a fair point on this?
I think they do have a fair point on this, right? Because during the pandemic, I've personally been to places like Bond Street and, just where you wouldn't have space to stand on a train. And it was all empty and it was just, there was no one there. So there is a case for footfall. There is definitely a case for, ensuring that the hospitality industries and the other industries survive. However, it needs to be done in a way that even the person visiting doesn't feel forced to visit. So it has to be done in a manner, Juliet, if I said, you need to come in 5 days a week because when you come in, you're going to go buy yourself a coffee. That's not the logic, right?
I can just make it at home.
So it has to have more compelling cause than, you're doing it because we need to get the economy back in action. There has to be, of course, that will happen as a secondary benefit. It cannot be the primary driver saying, I need to get out of home because there's a shop out there waiting for me to buy lunch from them. Right. So I think we need to understand that is a 2 degrees away benefit that will happen. But the primary driver has to be something more compelling than that. I agree with you. That comes to the second point, saying for organizations, those coffee cooler, coffee stand chats or those, water cooler chats, the bouncing of ideas, they make a really big difference. So I personally go into work about 3 days a week, sometimes 4 days a week, and they make a really big difference the way I would look at it. So people need to feel that we're going there because we're needed there, because we are included in a conversation, and then they can feel really happy to go and stop by for a drink, after work, and obviously, generate business as a result of that.
You see, the other thing which springs to mind as well is that there are people who say, well, look, I would love to come into the office, but transport costs are very, very high. And given that my money is being eroded, or rather the value of my money is being eroded by soaring inflation, it's actually cheaper for me to stay at home, because otherwise my boss is going to have to pay me more to get me to the office. I mean, is this circle which can't be squared, really?
I think it is. And, the inflation, of course, we're all talking about the inflation. Everyone's feeling the hit. And there is a definite argument there. But again, Juliet, in terms of, when we talk about mental health, there are those of us who really want to get out of home. And that will call, the cost downstream of, your well-being or your mental health are also there. So it's only just thinking about, the short-term game versus the long game and figuring out a better way to do so. So maybe, people don't go every single day, but people go a few days a week. And remember, a lot of people have relocated to further out places and their travel costs will have gone up. But I think those are individuals who've made a conscious life choice to say, even after the pandemic, this is how I wish to operate. So we will find those who will come back more regularly, but some who will just make a life decision saying, inflation or no inflation, I'm going to just, go out. I'm speaking with someone who's relocating to, I think, Spain and wants to just come in once in 2 weeks. So with that, it's a life choice.
But certainly one that works for them. But yeah. Do you feel that perhaps at some point there has to be a compromise on this? That on the one hand, You encourage people to work from offices while the economy is trying to deal with its problems. And these are entrenched problems, very complicated to navigate. And then you give them the home working option when things start to improve in the economy. So in that sense, employers can feel, yes, it is the right thing to do. We really can do the work-life balance thing because we can sense that the tightness in the economy is easing.
I think that's a very good point, Juliet. And the only way I would look at this is, you know, logically and on paper, it would make sense, right? Saying we all come out, we all support when we need to, and then later we can have more options. But if you really look at it from the impact on individuals and their lives, like I was speaking with a lady yesterday who's got a, you know, 4-year-old daughter. And she says, my daughter's now got used to seeing me every single day. And, you know, it really distresses her when I go to work. Now, how do you explain to people's families, children and all that, saying, okay, this is just a 6-month thing, or this is just a 1-year thing. You're going to be with a childminder for so long. And then after that, we can all, you know, adapt. Because a lot of employees also look for certainty to say, how long am I going to have to put up with this? And after that, what is the deal? Is my job contract going to change? Are the desks in the office going to change? So the downstream impact of actually making that happen might make it really difficult to crystallize.
But again, it's one of those issues which has to be resolved. It's not going to be easy because there are so many components to this. But is there likely to be a danger of segmentation? In other words, you'll find that sectors like technology, which have always been quite flexible, they're more likely to offer the home working option compared to industries like banking, for example, where flexibility can seem as alien and which is very results driven.
I think it's a great point. The only thing I would say here is I'd probably not look at it as a danger or a risk. I would look at it as an opportunity possibly also, because that segmentation could become, you know, saying here's like, you know, you have a certain set of people who dress a certain way, who live a certain way. And that is what Stephen Covey says, you know, the whole beauty of diversity is everyone can be themselves and still be together. So what about an economy or a world where we say, okay, banking usually tends to operate in this manner, or, you know, technology tends to be this sort of industry where people work from home. And then you have the likes, which are just not for dogmatic reasons, but like hospitality, where you need to be there because it's all about the experience. And food industries where, you know, it's the culinary experience where you need the chef to be there, you know. So there are going to be various industries where people will have a certain way of working. And of course, if the industry just wants to stick to a certain pattern for the sake of it, then people will leave and move to newer industries. And I saw that with the banking industry earlier, Juliet, not specifically with the pandemic, but I saw that with, you know, the 2008 crisis and, you know, the senior manager regime and all that. A lot of people just chose to leave the industry because it didn't work for them anymore. So we'll just see that sort of shift where people will think about, you know, here's the industry that suits my lifestyle, or here's what I want to do. Like I was telling you earlier, you know, my daughter is going to be joining banking and she cannot wait to get going to the office. You know, every single day she's looking at, you know, what outfits I'm going to wear. So the different people really look for different things in different phases of life.
It just seems like such a long time ago in my life when I worried about what I was going to wear to work. That shows you how ancient I am.
I'm already getting a lot of, you know, these trousers. Mom, they're so well cut. You know, they're going to be so good for my work. And I said, that's 3 months away. But, you know, what do you do with the excitement? And actually, it's a good thing, don't you think?
Absolutely. The challenge is to sustain it. But I mean, look, what we're sort of moving into when we talk about segmentation is looking at the wider economy, how it's going to sort of fragment it or evolve, I guess. But I mean, you touched on this yourself, but do you see more people going into self-employment? Because the impression that I get is that perhaps people have lost their fear of going solo, because I guess that if you want to be self-employed, it allows you to strike the work-life balance. Or perhaps if you don't want to be self-employed because you are put off by the risk of starting up a business and everything that goes with it, that perhaps people are more likely to target sectors that are more sympathetic to their work-life aspirations, like technology.
I think definitely there is a case there. People would target what works for their life balance. Along with that, to what you're saying with the new businesses and people starting their own thing, I was reading a statistic somewhere, I don't remember the exact numbers, but also because a lot of people have got funds from, you know, COVID loans and things like that, that's given people courage to say, okay, I've got some support, I've got some backing, so I can now do something on my own. Or, you know, they've not spent so much on holidays or, you know, going out. So there's a little bit of that funding, you know, cushion some, for some individuals where they've now got the courage. And a lot of people have just sat back and thought, if not now, then when? Because a lot of times, you know, we're putting off these things saying, I'll start my own venture in 5 years. So a lot of people are just now taking the leap to say, now is the time. So a lot of times, I think that is also what will spur this whole, you know, I need to do something on my own. It will make a few people afraid. But again, these are like black swan events, right? They come once in a long time. So actually, we are right now, the way the statistics goes, and this is Nassim Nicholas Taleb's book, The Black Swan, that we should now be at our most comfortable because now we're furthest away from the next black swan event. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because if they happen only so rarely, then the fact that we're so close to it means it's far away now.
Fair enough point. And look, the final question really is what type of a working arrangement, if that's the appropriate expression to use, can we expect going forward? And who's going to have the final say about how it looks or how it operates? Is it going to be the government, perhaps using the weight of the law behind it? Will it be the business community using its heft? Or perhaps the workers themselves? And I'm thinking particularly about the millennials, because their aspirations may differ quite wildly from their parents, and their parents are coming up for retirement. They're the people that the bosses and the governments have to deal with in the future.
I think that's a brilliant question. And I do think it's the last, because the government can try and influence and encourage people saying, you know, here's how to do so. And, you know, this is why it's good for your productivity. As you know, we heard, it's not that every 2 minutes you're going to the fridge to get your cheese and crackers and things like that. So you are more focused. But businesses as well can set out their policies and encourage people. But ultimately, it's the employees right now. It's about where employees choose to invest their time, their energy, their productivity. So it really does depend on them driving, because the policies then learn to adapt, right, based on what the individuals are doing. And when they don't work, then individuals find their options as well. So I would say it is more the people than anyone else.
Okay, interesting note on which to end this, because sadly we have run out of time. But Vinita Ramtree, an absolute pleasure speaking to you. It's always a pleasure speaking to you because you give such a comprehensive analysis of some really complex subjects. And so we appreciate the time out that you've taken for us. But you've been listening to the Magnus Communications podcast, and join us again very soon.